Welcome to the Finance Marketing Podcast, a show that empowers finance professionals to market their businesses in ways that feel good and actually achieve results. I'm your host, Hillary. I've been working with folks in financial services to develop marketing strategies that work and create results-oriented marketing content since 2020. And I've learned a lot about what works in finance marketing, what doesn't work, and where financial services pros get stuck. Join us each Friday as we explore real, effective ways to market your finance business and connect with folks who truly embody your ideal clients. My guest today is Tony Stewart, CLU LA CPFFE, who is an internationally recognized financial preparedness advocate, award-winning author, top-ranked podcaster, and speaker who is changing the way we think about money. Tony is an advisor at Insurance Nerds, Paperwork, and Dingo Technologies. He is also the founder of the Get Ready Movement to empower and educate people on all areas of personal finance. The Get Ready Method empowers people to take control of their money while providing a framework for integrating financial products, advice, and advisors. Now, if you haven't met Tony before, you are in for a treat with this conversation. In addition to all of his great insights and knowledge, Tony has the most calming, welcoming voice. It almost doesn't matter what he says. I could listen to Tony talk all day long. But of course, he does have some really interesting things to share. And most notably, I'm excited for you to hear him talk about how the thought leadership he's developed has required him to take clear, strong stances on contested issues within and outside of the insurance industry, and why those stances have strengthened his personal brand and marketing efforts. So without further ado, let's get into it. Tony, thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Finance Marketing Podcast. I'm so excited to have you here.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Hillary. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I would love to start if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, and just give us kind of your background story.
All right. Well, so I started off, you know, as a kid with everybody's dream of going into the insurance industry. So like everybody else, I kind of fell into some of these things that I did. So I graduated from college with a finance degree, because the one thing I knew is that whatever I did, hopefully I'd make a little bit of money. So I might as well learn what to do with it, because I had no idea what I wanted to do when I was in college. And so over the next few years, I sold insurance for a little while, and I quickly found that I was more interested in advising, consulting. And I got a license from the state of California called the Life and Disability Insurance Analyst, which allowed me to do fee-based consulting on insurance policy. So I worked for the predominant next couple decades with financial planners, litigation attorneys, people across the gamut. And what I found was that most people didn't really understand insurance, including people in the insurance industry and the greater financial services industry overall. So I got into writing and education, and that kind of led me to where I am today, doing concentrating on financial education and changing the way we think about money, because I think that theme runs through all personal finance, that people, even in the industry, don't fully understand all the products and services that we're engaged with. And that definitely translates down to consumers.
Okay, so you started in insurance, and then you fell down the rabbit hole of really falling in love with kind of the more human and emotional side of money, which is, I think, how you and I first got connected online. We were both kind of having these conversations and talking about these and realized that we had this in common. So can you tell me a little bit more about when you started writing and doing more of this education? What did that look like, and how did that fit into what you were doing at the time?
Well, at the time, I was doing it more as sort of to raise my brand in thought leadership. And so, you know, when I started writing, that was part of the purpose. But then I found that actually people like my writing, you know, which is always that surprise when you do something, you're like, hey, somebody actually likes what I'm doing. And so that encouraged me to keep going. Especially, you know, I was getting comments like, hey, you know, you're helping me understand life insurance where I didn't really understand it before. And you're actually taking a look at it from a neutral position, where most of the things on life insurance are all about, you know, like, hey, how great life insurance is and how it's a solution to every product. Where I was taking a stance like, well, it's just another tool in our tool bag. And we need to understand just how it works and to take all the emotions out of it is because, as you point out, is people put so many emotions and thoughts and other things into their money, and it impacts their financial decisions, and they make irrational decisions because of that. So, I wanted to get to the heart of that.
So when you were writing these things, were you writing for the consumer or were you writing for other advisors and insurance salesmen or both?
Well, really for both, and from the standpoint is that, I realize that most financial advisors and attorneys and allied professionals didn't really know much more about life insurance than consumers. So I took the standpoint that, it was a basic education and people could go as far as they want. So some of the stuff I write is pretty technical, but a lot of the stuff is very basic to get people, looking at, like asking questions. That's my whole thing is I want to encourage people to change the way they think about things, but really to ask questions and to learn. Because if we don't ask the right questions, we're not going to get the right answers.
So, did you start a blog? Is that where you were hosting this writing, or where were you publishing your writing?
Pretty much wherever I could. I sort of had a blog. I wasn't really consistent with it, but I was fortunate enough to start writing for AM Best. For people in the insurance field are familiar with AM Best. That was really the first place where I was writing for. And then I wrote for a series of other insurance websites and publications, and that led to me publishing my first book, Questions and Answers on Life Insurance, which was essentially a compilation of everything I'd written to date.
So you've written a book, which was that kind of the next step in developing your thought leadership and your personal brand and things like that. What has your book then? What doors, I suppose, have opened for you as a result of writing your book?
Well, in a couple different ways, and this has evolved with my most recent books. But what it did initially was, is it did help, with my credentials, show that I actually knew what I was talking about. I was fortunate. My first book, Questions and Answers on Life Insurance, has found some success. It's used in some college financial planning courses. A lot of financial planning firms use it. In a reference libraries, insurance agencies use it with training life insurance agents. So I've been very happy with that is because it is changing the way people think about life insurance. And then I got more interested in general financial education because the thing I realized is, I did some work with a Department of Insurance and I did some litigation consulting. And I found that a lot of times in these cases where there were problems, is that a lot of it was communication. Sometimes things fell between different advisors. Sometimes people didn't explain things properly to consumers. There are definitely some bad actors out there, but a lot of these things come down to misunderstandings. And so, with the Get Ready series, is I really wanted to help people organize their personal finance documents, services, products, understand how everything fit together. And then be able to review it, which I did in the Get Ready Blueprint. So I really was trying to tackle that thing of like, okay, what do I have? How does it fit together? And then where can somebody learn more?
I have many follow-up questions. The first one I want to start
Okay.
with is going back to your first book, which is now, like you said, it's being used in college courses and it's being used in reference libraries and things like that. I'm curious, how did you make that happen? What was your, did you approach universities with your book or did they find your book? I'm just curious about how you kind of got those eyes on it.
I think it was just a result of knowing people and being active. I did some speaking for some local financial planning associations. I was very active in the plan giving community with plan giving advisors. And I think that and some of the other writing that I did just raised my profile because I was known in the industry as a subject matter expert, and then my work with the California Department of Insurance serving on the curriculum board, that it just kind of grew, but that it took a number of years. You just can't, for people in the audience, you just can't jump into this. It takes consistency. But the other big thing for me that somebody told me before I started on this is one is earned media is much better than advertising. It's one, it's a heck of a lot cheaper, and you get more respect for it. But the other thing is that you have to be true to yourself and be consistent with your thought leadership. You can't be all over the place, for an issue here, against an issue there. Is you have to, really let people know what you think and take a stand for what you believe. So I think that's a big lesson that I've learned along the way.
And was that something that came naturally to you, or was that something that you kind of honed over time? This kind of like really taking a stand and being confident in what you believe. Because I know I've talked to a lot of people who they through their content creation process, they've talked to me about, that's really revealed to me what I've believed and helped me kind of root into that. So I'm just curious about your experience with that.
Well, I've always sort of actually felt this way, about taking strong stands and really, following through is, I played basketball, as grown up, as a young adult and everything. And, that was the thing we were always taught is finish strong, don't do something half-hearted. So, I figured that was part of it is, this is my goal and I'm going to drive towards the goal. And part of that goal is letting people know who I am and what I stand for, because you can't educate someone if they're unclear on what you're trying to educate them about. So that was it, is for me to be really clear on who I was and what I was doing so that it could help other people.
Now, my other question in relation to this is a lot of times when you take a strong stand, you get a lot of people who don't agree with you coming with some backlash or things like that. Has that been your experience, or has the stand that you've taken been fairly neutral?
Well, it's been both. Is one is taking a stand has allowed me to find my people, is because the people who are aligned with my thinking, I've now networked with on LinkedIn and off of LinkedIn, that we know each other, we've collaborated on projects, because we all believe the same thing. So from that standpoint, it's been great because it helps you find your people because they're the ones who believe what you do as well. And it allows you some wonderful collaboration opportunities, like you and I met, because we have some similar beliefs and theories and everything. But the other thing, yeah, it has led to some negative, conversations, I guess, is a good way to put it. But it's when you know what you believe, it's easy to defend your beliefs, and most of the time, most people are open to having a good conversation. There's a few people online. I mean, we all know about the trolls and everything else, but most people are open to having a conversation. You may agree to disagree, but as long as you can respect other people's opinions, it really hasn't been an issue for the most part.
So tell me a little bit about your subsequent books and what inspired you to continue writing. Because a lot of people would say, I've written a book, that's great, that was a huge labor of love, I'm done. So what inspired you to continue your writing process? And just tell me about those subsequent books that you've written.
Well, a big part of it was is I felt I wasn't done with my message, and I found new things that interested me. So, my second book was Insurance Made Easy. Well, I did a workbook for questions and answers on life insurance, but my second real book was Insurance Made Easy, and that was kind of, more of a general primer for across the insurance world, and I was trying to get at policies that aren't normally talked about as much, like disability insurance, earthquake insurance, the things that people need. So you can see that stream of where I was going with Get Ready is the first Get Ready book is Get Ready, step-by-step guide to maintaining your financial first aid kit, which is mostly about organizing all of your personal finance. But I wanted to be really thorough about it because, there's lots of checklists where people can list, their IRAs and all their other things, but it doesn't always include like college savings accounts or other things that we don't normally think about. So I wanted to get that. And then when I wrote that book, I got a lot of feedback like, hey, this is great, but how do I stick with it? How do I keep doing it? So, that's where I came up with the Get Ready Blueprint, which is a 52-week guide to changing the way you think about money, which has a weekly action item that reviews all areas of your financial life. It doesn't tell you how to invest your money, but I have people create an investment policy statement so they can come back and just see, you know, here are my goals, here's an overview. But the thing about it is that it repeats in the second year, because that's the biggest thing that I found is people don't go back and review their life insurance. They don't go back and review their bank accounts. They don't review the beneficiaries on their 401k accounts. You know, they just let those things ride. And I can't tell you how many times I came across a life insurance policy that I was reviewing, and it was an ex-spouse as a beneficiary.
Wow.
And that doesn't really please anybody to find out that their ex-spouse is the beneficiary on their insurance policy.
Right, right. So a question that I know a lot of people have is, when you write these kinds of thought leadership books, do you make money directly from book sales, or is it more about the doors that the books open for you?
Yeah, you don't make much money from book sales. The only way you can make money from book sales are people who are speakers and have good bulk book sales.
Mm.
You know, otherwise, it's really that you are doing it either because you feel you really want to get your message out in the world, or you want to help build your brand and thought leadership. And a book does make you a credible expert as long as it's a good book. So I would urge people that if you are going to write a book, make sure you do it quality. Get a good cover, have a real designer design the cover, have a real editor edit the book, you know, because it is, people are going to judge you by your book. And if your book does not look professional, you know, you're not going to be looked on as professional either.
Right. Can I ask you what publishing route you've gone? Because I know a lot of people wonder about that too. Should I self-publish, or should I go a traditional publishing route, or some sort of hybrid? Can I ask you about that process?
Oh, of course. So, you know, your choices really are self-publishing somewhere like Kindle or something like that. Or you can go with a traditional publisher, but it's hard to get a contract. You know, they really, for the most part, take on big name authors, you know, and they don't really put much marketing behind it. And then they end up owning the rights. So as a subject matter expert, I went a different route. I went with hybrid publishing with a publisher named Greenleaf Publishing Company. And what they look for are people who are, for the most part, subject matter experts in something. And then they help them write the book. So it is a little more expensive to do it that way. I retain a higher degree of, you know, the royalties, but I also own 100% of my content. So I've been able to reuse it in other collaborations. There's some websites that have used part of my content. I've licensed it in multiple places. So it allows you to have more control. So for an expert, it's worth, you know, if you think of it as an investment in your marketing platform, I would say hybrid publishing is the way to go, because you get a very professional looking book. You have a professional team designing the book, you know, taking you through all the steps, doing the proofreading, and then, you know, helping with the marketing. So I would say, you know, if you're going to do it to build your thought leadership, look at it as an investment, a marketing investment, rather than as a way to get income.
I love that. Are you still blogging today, or has blogging kind of fallen off your radar a little bit?
For the most part, it's fallen off the radar. I'm doing podcasting, and that's what I really enjoy on my podcast. I have people who are changing the way we think about money. And part of what I love about doing podcasts is I get to invite on really cool people that I can, you know, pick their brain and learn more. And hopefully there's other people who are enjoying the journey. I think the podcast has been somewhat successful. It doesn't have an audience of tens of thousands of people, but, you know, it's got a few people who tune in every once in a while. But, you know, for me, that's a great way to express myself. I do still do a little bit of writing, you know, for different publications, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to find time, and I got really bored with writing about life insurance. So I stopped writing about it because it got boring even to me after a while. So, you know, that happens sometimes.
So tell us about the podcast. What is the podcast called? What do you talk about? What kind of people do you interview? How long have you been doing it? All of that.
Well, so it's called the Get Ready Money Podcast. I started in 2019, and it was quite a journey, like everything else. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with it. And then a couple of years ago, I decided to really focus on the mission of people who are changing the way we think about money. And so the guests are, I try to get a really diverse range of people. I've had on fintech founders. I've had on people who are, run their own financial planning firm. I've had other authors on the podcast, so it really ranges, but I have a series of questions that I ask every guest, like for their top money tip, what money myth they're trying to break. But really, I try to get into their mission and their inspiration, because I want people to know who these people are so they can decide if this is someone who resonates with them. Because I think that's the other problem is, if you have a big name person like Dave Ramsey or Suze Orman, they're a certain way. And if you don't resonate with them, then you're not really going to take their advice to heart. Now, we can argue about, so anybody who wants to comment offline on LinkedIn about Suze Orman and Dave Ramsey, glad to talk about it. I'm not a huge believer in either one. And anybody who's a professional financial professional would definitely agree with that. But that's the thing. And here again is where I'm taking a stand for what I believe in. I don't believe in the work that either one of them do. It's great because they get people interested in money. The downside is they don't give great advice. So what I try to have on my show are people who actually know what they're talking about and give good advice in their area.
One thing that you said that you just said in passing, but I really want to highlight it, was you said, I started it in 2019. I didn't know really what I wanted to do with it at the time, but I just started it and now it's morphed into this really great podcast, with so much value for your listeners. And the reason I wanted to bring that up is because I think that a lot of times we get in our own heads so much, I know I have to know exactly what the end goal is with this. I have to know exactly what my strategy is. But sometimes we just have to start putting our voice out there, and then the path reveals itself to us. So I'd love to know if that's been your experience as well, or if you think I'm kind of off base there.
Oh, you're 100% on target. And I think, that when we think back of our successes in our career and our personal life, that was always because we finally took that step. It's, you have analysis by paralysis. And I do that all the time. Is this ready? Is this something I want to share with the world? And, a lot of half-baked ideas. But, until you actually put it out there and get feedback, you never know what is going to resonate with people or it's not going to resonate with people. And then you have to decide, like, am I happy with 10 people liking this or do I want thousands to like this? So, that's all up to you is, are you doing it for your own sake or are you doing it for somebody else? And then are the results positive? And I've known people, they start a podcast, they decide after a year that they don't want to do it or, whatever. And that's okay, but you have to take that first step. What's the saying? Every journey starts with it one step, that's not the saying, but I think you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So one question I'd love to ask is, what do you think is next for you in the next few years? Are you working on another book, or are you kind of happy with where you're at? What do you think is next?
Well, I think right now it's building awareness for what I call the Get Ready Movement, which is, integrating, the Get Ready Blueprint, the financial calendar. It's had a lot of resonance with people. I'm going to be announcing a couple partnerships, hopefully, in the next couple months, for organizations that are integrating the Get Ready Blueprint with their work. But it's really, I want to continue to highlight and spotlight people who are doing great work and collaborate with them. I'm advising a couple great fintechs right now. So I'm excited about seeing how technology is going to help change personal finance. But really, it's continuing to advocate for consumer education.
Okay, I love that. So, if you are looking back on yourself when you first started, kind of putting yourself in those shoes, what advice would you give to yourself? But you haven't written any books yet, you're just starting to form your beliefs. What advice would you give yourself?
Probably be patient is the first thing that comes to mind. I'm relatively impatient and I've started some ideas and they haven't caught fire quickly enough. And so I tend to bounce to the next idea. So I think, looking back is having had more patience with certain ideas and giving them a little more time to resonate. So that would be my big advice is having patience. And it's good investing advice too. Have patience with your investments. So throw that in.
It applies to so many areas of life, doesn't it?
Yeah. My wife would tell you I'm very impatient, so. But she's not on the podcast, so she doesn't have a vote right now.
She doesn't get a vote right now. I would never know that. You have such a calming voice and presence that I would never imagine you as being an impatient person.
Everybody's got that side to them, so.
Right. Well, Tony, where can people find you? Well, of course, link to all of your books in the show notes, but where else can people find you if they're looking to learn more about you?
Well, there's my website, tonystewart.com. And if that's hard to spell, just you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm connected to Hillary. So LinkedIn is where I'm most active. I'm sort of on Instagram sometimes, but a little bit more sporadic on Instagram.
Okay, great. Well, I'll link to all of it in the show notes so people don't have to struggle with the spelling if they don't want to. But Tony, this has been such a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate you sharing your insights with hybrid publishing and the active writing books and building thought leadership and things like that. So thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's a pleasure, Hillary. Thanks for having me on today.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Finance Marketing Podcast. If you're eager to market your business in a way that feels good and actually gets results, sign up for the Finance Marketing Podcast newsletter in the show notes so you never miss another episode. If you liked what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite listening app and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you back here next Friday.